Ian, good morning.
Good morning. Thank you for having me.
Thanks so much for joining me. Now, straight into it, there's quite a complex issue, but let's start with a broad question. How would the effects of climate change force people out of their countries to seek refuge?
Well, the probably easiest example is our Pacific Island neighbors, such as Kiribati. So warming causes sea level to expand. You may remember high school physics, when you warm liquids, they expand.
Mm-hmm.
And unless we stay well below 2 degrees, in fact, I would say we have to stay below 1.5 degrees in order for most of the Pacific Islands in small island states such as Kiribati not to become uninhabitable due to rising sea levels and increased storm surges, because rising temperatures also make storms more severe. You may remember from high school physics, when you heat things up, they move around more.
Yeah. Okay. So it's looking a bit dire, certainly in the Pacific, and that's something that's been in discussion for a while now. Now, the study points out that developing countries in particular are the most vulnerable to the impacts of climate change and are more likely to result in climate refugees. What about other developed countries like Australia or the US? Is it possible that extreme weather events in these countries could lead to refugees coming, or us becoming climate refugees?
Well, it depends on who define the refugees. I would suggest that in the United States, there has been internally displaced refugees from the recent storms in Houston and et cetera. But those countries have the resources to cope with those severe hurricanes and manage them. The problem in developing countries is they don't have the resources. The other problem in Africa, particularly sub-Saharan Africa, 2 degrees of warming due to global geographic and climate factors will represent about 3 degrees of warming in sub-Saharan Africa. And at that temperature, it will be hard to sustain the crops, etc., in order to feed the people in southern Africa. It's already hard in many of those areas already. And you're going to see people fleeing up through Libya. You could probably... I know the government likes to paint a lot of the current refugees as economic refugees, but are you an economic refugee if you no longer sustain your subsistence agriculture? And I would suggest that some of the people fleeing Africa to Europe now are probably really climate refugees, because they can no longer sustain their livelihood in Africa, which is already warm more than the rest of the world, because it's more sensitive to climate.
Once supplies of food do come into play, it does become a little bit more frightening. Now, I understand that a lot of these countries who are going to be most affected are developing countries. They're going to be quite dependent on their own internal food supplies and agriculture there.
Yep.
In terms of flow-on effect, more globally, how much damage could climate change do to food supplies if agriculture becomes impossible in developing countries?
Well, developed countries, globally, it's a very tricky question. One of the most intransigent nations in the climate change negotiations is Russia, because Russia sees that areas of Siberia, etc., may become warmer and warm enough to grow crops. Therefore, is not as nearly adversely affected as Gambia in southern Africa. But Russia, well, it's not a terribly rich country, but certainly has a lot more resources than the least developed countries that I mainly work with to adapt and to climate change, etc. So global food supply is a very tricky question in terms of on a global basis. But it's these really poor countries who are already struggling to produce enough food for the people that are going to be affected. One of the countries I've worked most closely with is Afghanistan. And in Afghanistan, because the glaciers have disappeared due to global temperatures rising, they no longer have the glacial melt in the spring that used to feed the water for subsistence agriculture. So people from there are internal refugees and moving to Kabul and contributing to the insecurity problems of Afghanistan, because they come disaffected citizens in the big cities. There's no jobs for them. They're living in shanty towns. They don't have accommodation, and they're ideal recruits for the Taliban. So they, those internal refugees contribute to the ongoing security crisis in Afghanistan. So it's you know, it's that food supply that creates you know, risks of terrorism, risks of refugees, just places becoming uninhabitable due to rising sea levels, crops failing due to severe storms and increased temperatures and changing rainfall patterns that we're already seeing in Australia.
If you're just tuning into The Daily, we're currently speaking with Dr. Ian McGregor, lecturer at UTS Business School, about a recent study that warns of possible climate change crisis that could be induced by extreme weather events and climate change and with climate refugees. Now, Ian, we're already seeing Australia has very poor management with refugees, and there's been some issues in other parts of in Europe as well. Now, what sort of policies and legislation do you think down the line, as this becomes more of a reality, would we be needing to put in to ensure the rights and protection of climate refugees if they do need to migrate to other countries?
Well, the people who produced this report, I'd recommend to everyone, called Beyond Borders by the Environmental Justice Foundation, are calling for actually international legal recognition of climate refugees. So the moment the International Convention on Refugees only states that you're a refugee if you have a well-founded fear of persecution in your country. And climate change isn't really persecution. It's not, you know, it's due to lack of food or your island disappearing. You know, New Zealand has probably been most progressive in the Pacific in accepting really original, you know, early climate refugees. I'd describe them from Tuvalu and Kiribati and some of the other small island Pacific states. So New Zealand is providing university education to some of the young people from those islands, either with a view of them staying in New Zealand or going back to the islands and helping with adaptation disaster and emergency management, which these islands will increasingly need over the next 20 to 30 years as they experience more climate change.
Well, finally, Ian, I want to, you're just speaking about, obviously, the way that we're handling the refugees already. Now, our current political environment, issues of climate change are pretty divisive. And when we have some high figures who are, you know, denying climate change, how is this going to affect the treatment of climate refugees when issues of climate change can't be settled and we're seeing opposition to the Paris Climate Agreement and things like that?
I sort of despair of some of our crazy climate skeptics that somehow getting elected to Parliament. I mean, the science was settled back in 1985 in the Villach Declaration, when the International Meteorological Office, the UN Environment Programme, and the International Council of Scientific Unions told us we were conducting a dangerous experiment, warming the Earth. And we've already heated the Earth by 1 degree Celsius, and we're already suffering the effects. I mean, it's actually, you know, high school science that carbon dioxide is a greenhouse gas, and we've gone from 280 parts per million in the atmosphere to 400 parts per million over the last 150 so years. The more of it, the more heat the atmosphere trapped. It's very simple. I can't understand the denialism. I wish we had a bipartisan climate policy like in the UK, where they're powering ahead in addressing climate change and have been for more than 10 years now.
It's certainly an unpleasant situation to be watching. And with such dire consequences looming on the horizon, not just environmentally, but humanitarian aspect as well, it certainly is a pressing issue more so than ever. Ian, thanks so much for joining me this morning to unpack a little bit about what we might be seeing in the future with climate refugees.
Thank you very much for inviting me, and I commend everyone to have a look at the report and sign up. They've got a petition urging a global climate convention on refugees, which I think is something we'll actually regressively need.
Ian, thanks very much for your time.